Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It is the Brian Lehrer Show. Brian is not here today, filling in. I'm Juan Manuel Benitez, the host of Pura Politica on New York One Noticias. Today is World AIDS Day, and the city of New York is dedicating its new AIDS memorial in the park across from what once was St. Vincent's Hospital, where so many New Yorkers suffered and died from the disease. Here to help us commemorate the event and to talk about the so-called plague years and how the city and the world responded is David Franz. David directed the Oscar-nominated documentary How to Survive a Plague. He's also a contributing editor for New York Magazine and now the author of How to Survive a Plague, the inside story of how citizens and science tamed AIDS. Hi, David.
Hey, great to be with you.
Thank you for being with us. And AIDS is now a treatable disease, David, so it can be easy for many to forget how devastating the AIDS epidemic was during the 1980s and the 1990s, and that over 100,000 New York men, women, and children have died from AIDS. Today, the city is dedicating, like we said, a memorial in the West Village. How significant is that memorial for you?
I think it's way beyond its time. We had, for the last 15 years, really not addressed the devastation that we experienced during the plague years in New York. And as I had written once in New York Magazine, the old St. Vincent's Hospital, where so much of that death occurred, stood in as a kind of an in-place monument for the plague years and what it did and how it attacked the city.
Yes, because you have like a really vivid description of what once was a scene at St. Vincent's Hospital. Like I'm going to read a passage of your book, and I quote, "Scanning the rows, I could see that every third or fourth man had the look. Sunken cheeks, sparse hair, eyes that showed fear, shoulders that bent in pain. One, all spots and bones, balanced painfully on a pillow he'd brought along from home. Another seemed to be dozing. His head was cocked backward onto a companion's arm, and his mouth and eyes were both wide open. The blind, like horses and snakes, don't need to close their eyes to sleep." That's pretty vivid. David, what was the significance of this hospital during the AIDS crisis?
I don't think there's any hospital in the world that was more taxed by the epidemic. And St. Vincent's, interestingly, was a Roman Catholic hospital. And so they were challenged also by the conflicts between giving care for the sick and the dogma of the church, which taught that homosexuality was sinful and that any disease or penalty that came from it was a result of that kind of original sin. So there were real clashes to begin with at St. Vincent's. There were demonstrations from the AIDS community, the lesbian and gay community, in front of St. Vincent's to demand that the hospital, right in the middle of the very center of the epicenter of the epidemic, that it behave like a hospital, that it not turn patients away, that it not refuse to allow partners of the sick to visit them. And ultimately, it turned around and became a kind of a model for in-hospital patient care in the epidemic, studied by and replicated by hospitals around the world.
You're listening to the Brian Lehrer Show. Filling in for Brian today, I'm Juan Manuel Benitez. It's World AIDS Day, and we are talking to David Franz. His book, How to Survive a Plague. And listeners, were you part of or close with New York's gay community during the AIDS crisis? Or maybe you're a younger gay New Yorker. Either way, what does the new AIDS memorial mean to you? Or maybe you have a question for David Franz. You can give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. The epigraph at the beginning of your book, David, is grief is a sword or it is nothing. What does that quote mean to you in the context of remembering this AIDS epidemic?
I wanted in the book to remember not just the dark years of the epidemic, but also the brilliance of the people who actually kind of took responsibility for addressing the epidemic. And it came slowly, as you may remember. It was impossible to get any attention to the epidemic from the city of New York for 2 years when the disease was decimating the gay community. The mayor wouldn't even mention it or meet with gay leaders. The president of the United States wouldn't say anything for many years, for 5 years at least, and then begrudgingly, and then with moral judgment. So the people who stood up, who actually began to respond and to counter that kind of prevailing negligence, those are the people I wanted to address as well. And then I wanted to look at what it meant to have survived that. It was 15 years of unrelenting death, hundreds of thousands of Americans dead, millions of people around the world dead. And when you come through all of that, what do you have? Well, what does it leave you? What is it? How does it affect you? And I wanted to focus on, and in the book I do focus on, this idea that it leaves us changed and it gives us a responsibility to action.
Mm-hmm. And your life in New York is intimately tied up in the history of AIDS. Just 2 weeks after you moved into a shared room with your college roommate in Midtown, the New York Times ran the headline on it was a Friday of the 4th of July weekend, and the headline was "Rare Cancer Seen in 41 Homosexuals." Was this the first mainstream coverage of the disease?
It was. It was. It was the first hint that something awful was happening. It was also, you know, came at a time 41 people impacted that we knew of. It was probably larger than that. But when good public health response protocol might have contained it.
Mm-hmm. Because also, mainstream media didn't coverage that much the AIDS crisis at the beginning, right? And you write that it took 2 years and almost 600 dead before the Times put a story on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
The Village
right.
Voice ran a feature that called the danger overblown and was nearly silent otherwise. So tell me about this other publication, The New York Native. Why do you single it out?
Well, The New York Native was a small a weekly newspaper that published for the gay community in the city. It had a circulation in 1981, 1982 of a few thousand. And when AIDS hit, it took on the responsibility to practice serious journalism in the epidemic when no one else was doing it. And I joined the staff in 1982 or 1983 and helped. And, you know, it was the first of the gay newspapers that actually tried to do news reporting. We taught ourselves the tools of journalism, and we turned those toward the scientific community, toward the political community, trying to see, you know, what was happening, what wasn't happening, to keep the community informed. You have to remember this was a time before social media, which is almost impossible to imagine. But the it was, you know, print media, even in that small, you know, quantity, that was responsible for disseminating the information that was necessary for keeping people alive, for bringing people into care, and for holding feet to the fire when necessary. It played a really, really seminal role and should be recognized by history for having carried the burden of AIDS reporting, of AIDS news generation, of community defense for many years.
Mm-hmm. Let's take some phone calls. We have Lori in Livingston, New Jersey. Lori, thank you for calling. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Hi, thank you. This is more of a comment. As a young nursing student in 1984 in Buffalo, I went to school in Buffalo, I was in the hospital, and when I put on a pair of gloves to work with a patient, actually, she had a colostomy. She didn't have AIDS, but the point was just to protect myself. My nursing instructor said, you never use gloves with a patient. You don't make them feel bad. And so that's just such a different time. I mean, it's really not that long ago, but things are very different today.
Thank you, Lori.
Right. Yeah, thank you, Lori. Now cashiers wear gloves.
Yep. And that was, it's really, really different today, right, David?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, back then, in that period, we didn't really know what was causing the disease. We didn't know how it was spread. It was only hypothesized that it was a virus. So people really didn't know what kind of precautions to take.
Right. We're going to take another call. Brian in Brooklyn. Brian, thank you for calling the Brian Lehrer Show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a listener for many years, and this is my first time calling. So
thank
you. I'm honored to be on the air. And David, thank you so much for your writing, which is very meaningful to me and to my husband in particular.
I'm calling
as a gay man who was born in St. Vincent's Hospital a couple of years before the AIDS plague, but certainly something that I have taken great interest in, the St. Vincent's story over the years. I wonder what your thoughts are on the memorial that's being dedicated today, what the aesthetics are, how it's... speaks to the monumental, challenge of commemorating this era, and how you think it turned out in the end. And thanks again for the call. Take my call.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. I have to confess, I'm not an architecture critic, and I have not seen the monument. I'm in San Francisco currently, and I know it's being unveiled today. I've seen models. I've seen drawings. There's something that speaks to the human soul in visiting a monument to the dead, and we had no true place to go in New York to remember the dead, to honor the dead, and to find the strength to continue this ongoing battle against this epidemic. And in that regard, I think it's a great addition to the city of New York. I know that the location is inspired because of the proximity to all of that death. I also know, and I think this is really unfortunate in our history, that we just don't know the names of those 100,000 New Yorkers who died. We don't know the names of the 700,000 Americans that have died of the disease. We have no way of commemorating them as individuals, and that saddens me. Mm-hmm. We've been kept from that information in a way, and some of it is because when some people died so quickly that their doctors never diagnosed them. Mm-hmm. Some is because family members kept the diagnosis a secret. Mm-hmm. And some of those deaths are attributed to suicide because the person with AIDS chose pills or death over the very certain future of suffering and pain. And so we commemorate them in this idea of this kind of global number, 38 million people worldwide. The numbers are enormous, but we have to remember the individuals behind them.
My understanding, David, is that right now some of those names are being read in the commemoration ceremony that is taking place in the West Village. We're going to hear now from Lisa in Queens. Lisa, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to call in and say I worked on an AIDS unit from probably the early 90s, like 92, 93, mm-hmm. on Roosevelt Island up until when I left healthcare in 2011. And, in the 90s, I was a student. Every week that I went into work, there was a whole new unit. Everyone had passed away in those mm-hmm. 7 days, till when I left healthcare in 2011, where people didn't even look sick and, so manageable with medication that you could test, really healthy. And I don't want people to kind of take that for granted. There's a whole new set of issues that are coming up where, there's a huge increase in heroin use among young people that weren't even alive during that time. And, I feel like there's always going to be a resurgence in the more vulnerable communities, like more socioeconomically depressed areas. And I feel like, if it does come back, the initial group, gay men, they've unified they're educated, they're protected. But these young people and, you know, these more vulnerable communities, I feel like are very much in danger, especially with changes in healthcare and in our government policies as far as, like, needle exchange, mm-hmm. preventative care, access to medication. And I feel like that it could happen again, and it's a scary thing.
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah, David, because for all those young people out there that maybe many of them might be gay, and they don't know what happened back in the 80s and the 90s. Do you think that they should learn the history better so they don't repeat the same mistakes? Because even though it's a manageable disease at this point, for the most part, at least here in the United States, it can be extremely risky.
You know, I don't think that they need to try to picture the kind of devastation that we experienced in order to learn their lessons from this history. You know, HIV infection is just not going to be the same for them. They're not going to see an entire generation killed in a plague. Mm-hmm. What they need to know, and I think this is what this history has to offer for them, is that the community that came before them did amazing things, that there's a tradition of having risen up, having moved from utter disenfranchisement to positions of power, to have affected such revolutionary change, really, in the way that medicine and science is practiced today, that there's so much about American life that is the product of and influenced by AIDS and AIDS activism that is the legacy of that period, and really a gift to the future generations. I think that's the message of empowerment that would help us reach those communities. We're talking, you know, with HIV is being passed around mostly in the very young, 14 to 24. Mm-hmm. And we haven't reached them with a sense, not that they should worry about dying from this disease, but that they have the power to do something in their own lives that right. would keep them healthy and would keep their community healthy and would allow them to have some sort of real impact in civic life in the future. And the caller was right. It is mostly people who are people of color. The young transgender community is at highest risk for HIV transmission. We're just not reaching them. We're not giving them the inspiration to mm-hmm. come into care, to protect their own health, and to engage with their community.
And in a review this week, Andrew Sullivan wrote in the Times that your book, David, and I quote, shows how none of this, meaning medical progress for the treatment of AIDS, was inevitable. How it took specific, flawed individuals of vastly different backgrounds to help bring this plague to an end in a decade and a half, end of quote. What does he mean when he says that none of this was inevitable?
You know, I see the history is a history of misfired initiatives, of missed opportunities, of a lack of leadership in the epidemic, a lack of leadership in the scientific community, a lack of political will in Washington. And that, we don't know, but that might have gone on forever. And what changed that was a slow but growing and ultimately very triumphant activism movement that started in the first days of the epidemic, that was often barked forward by people like Larry Kramer, mm-hmm. one of the kind of seminal figures in AIDS activism and in the whole plague. And then what we see in the history is this development of a kind of an elite within the activist movement that mastered the science, that mastered an understanding of how drugs are developed, that learned as much about immunology as was possible at the time, and forced their way into collaboration with the researchers and the pharmaceutical chemists and the government officials, and in order to be able to bring the sense of urgency and also innovation to the whole process that allowed the drugs finally to be identified, tested, and brought to market in 1996. Mm-hmm. And the question I ask myself is, would that have happened anyway? I believe it would have. Would it have happened in early 1996? No.
Uh-huh.
I know that would not have happened. And if every day, every week, every month delayed meant just a pile on of more death.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, this work by these citizen scientists, you know, these self-educated and really as unusual coalition of people, including, you know, a high school dropout and an experimental playwright and a bond trader, people whose backgrounds were so disparate that you couldn't imagine them in coalition, that they made this happen.
Uh-huh.
They brought this to this conclusion. Didn't end the epidemic, but it made it finally possible to survive the infection, and that ended the plague.
Well, the book is How to Survive a Plague, the inside story of how citizens and science tamed AIDS. David Franz has two book talks in the area next week on Monday, December 5th at 7 p.m. at the Union Square Barnes & Noble, and on Tuesday, December 6th at 6 p.m. at the Roosevelt House on the Upper East Side. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you, one man.